On this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show, we discuss the iPhone X, our first impressions of the new Apple device, some stuff from BlizzCon, and all the other exciting iOS gaming news of the week. Stick with us. And this week's podcast is sponsored by Edgar. You can download it now on the App Store for free.
I know a magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish. For the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Touch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number 329, recording on November 3rd, 2017. November already. It's crazy.
Scary.
One of the podcasts I listen to a lot does daily episodes, and like they always make a big deal at the start of every month because it's like your time this year is almost gone. It makes you feel really old.
So,
I guess November for us is we're about a month and, well, a month and like 3 weeks, month and a half out from all of our best game stuff.
Don't remind me.
Which is, I was thinking about that, more behind the scenes-ish stuff. I guess we are judging, man, I look tired in my camera. tired or old, one or the other. We're judging the Game Awards this year, which if you haven't heard of that, that's Jeff Keighley's thing. What was it before then? It was like the VGA Awards or something like that.
I don't remember.
There's been like this event itself has existed in several forms with a few different names over the years, and its most recent iteration is just called the Game Awards, which is, I mean, yeah, I guess it's cool that it has such a direct name, you know, but it's like when I've been sending emails to people about it that don't know about it, they're like, yeah, all right, cool, the Game Awards, neat. And instead of, you know, like you know, the VGA Awards or something, that
the Oscars, you know, or something has, that has like a name
instead of just the Video Game Awards, which, yeah, I don't know, I guess people are into this very intentionally named things this time around. But I don't even know where I was going with that train of thought. My brain is garbage today. This week has been insane with the new iPhone. Last week was crazy with Animal Crossing. This is the first time you've listened to this podcast. I'm sorry, your episode's usually way more put together. We are primarily sponsored on Patreon at patreon.com/touch arcade. Do a bunch of other shit. You basically just put /touch arcade behind most things. You'll find something we do.
This is like in Spaceballs when the priest is trying to marry them for like the third time. And yeah, he's like, fast version.
Twitch.tv/touch arcade, youtube.com/touch arcade, discord.gg/touch arcade. You get the idea. I'm like trying to half watch BlizzCon out of the corner of my eye, so I know when to publish a story while I talk at the same time. This is going to be a nightmare. So BlizzCon's happening today. The iPhone X came out this morning. What else is going down that I need to set the scene on?
I don't know. It's just a scatterbrain day.
Scatterbrain day, yeah. So I guess we should rewind the clocks back to last week, as we recorded on Thursday, which missed the iPhone X pre-order drama.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure we'll rewind the clocks back later to talk about what I was talking about before I lost what I was thinking of. But so we recorded on Thursday, and that was the night that iPhone pre-orders went live. And and I guess you could kind of caveat that with, you know, usually in that if you follow the Apple scene and like know the tricks and know exactly when it's going to go live and you use the Apple Store app and, you know, everything else, like it's usually not a huge deal to pre-order the new thing, especially if you like, you know, set your alarm for it was 2 a.m. Central Time. So what's that, midnight Pacific, right?
Yeah.
So you just set an alarm for 10 minutes before. So, you know, you're up and ready and got your junk going on. And like this year around, the Mac Rumors people had a pretty good tip that I hadn't thought about before. And that, like, I guess you could, you can add stuff as a favorite on the store and like already kind of configure around what your what you want.
Save you a few steps.
Yeah. So it saves you, you know, which, you know, the thinking being like, well, you know, if you are even 15 seconds ahead of other people and the iPhone 10 is a shorter supply as people think, like that could mean like getting it on launch day versus getting it a week later. So like it was a little silly how min-maxy it was, but at the same time, it was valid. So anyway, I was able to get my pre-order in. I was sitting in the Mac Rumors Slack chat, like waiting. Everyone, like most of the Mac Rumors people on the East Coast, so it was very early for like 3 a.m. for them, right? So everyone was grumpy and just wants the store to come up. Julie from Mac Rumors, her store comes up at like midnight 01 and orders immediately. Yeah. And the rest of us, like it was like 10 minutes before the store came up. Yeah. But what was crazy is that Julie's order, and they've since, you know, I think she's got one now and they up the order dates considerably, but she ordered like 10 minutes before all of us and got her phone saying it was coming in like the middle of November.
Yeah.
Which made absolutely no sense. But so yeah, I don't know. I ordered no problem. Jared got, I guess you were like just a few seconds late before the carrier stuff started going down.
Yeah, I had a weird issue where, well, first of all, I was trying to do it through the Apple Store app, and it was not loading after midnight, and even like 12:01, 12:02, 12:03, just not loading, saying we've got something in store for you, we're shut down, whatever. And I was seeing on Twitter, because I was just closing the app, you know, getting it out of multitasking, opening it fresh. Yeah, I probably did that like 300 times.
No way to just like slide down to refresh or anything when the store's down.
I don't think so, but I was just trying to play it safe anyway. But then I started seeing people on like Twitter and stuff saying like, hey, my order went through. The Apple Store worked. Cool. And so I was trying on the web. I was trying on my phone.
Yeah.
And it just was not working for me. So some, and I wasn't alone. There's a lot of people that it didn't, the Apple Store didn't start working again until after midnight.
I was freaking out. Like I even, because I didn't order until like 12:10 or I guess 2:10 for me. But I was freaking out because I was like, oh shit. Like, because other people are on Twitter saying they ordered it and stuff. And I was like, I need to download the app on my iPad. Like maybe I have some weird cached on my phone and like it's not loading it at all for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was kind of frustrating. And then, you know, a few minutes in, 5 or 6 or 7, I think, I start working again. So I had my thing saved in my bag already so I could go straight to it and just hit buy. And everything was going fine. And it threw up is basically the delivery time had slipped to 2 to 3 weeks or maybe 5 to 6 or something like that. It slipped. And
this
I was
is before
freaking out.
You put in your Verizon stuff and it didn't go through?
This is before I hit the second issue. So it basically was like, hey, delivery is this time, but in-store pickup in your local thing is November 3rd. So I was like, oh, sweet. Well, I'll just go pick it up. I don't care. Yeah. And then I try to move on and complete my order. And then it throws up the thing of we can't contact the Verizon thing to, I don't know, whatever it does. It connects, make sure you're on Verizon or something stupid. And it could not do that. And so it automatically rolled me into a reservation order, which basically means they hold your place in line. And for non-video people, that is in air quotes. And they once they can contact Verizon and verify your stuff, they let you come in and complete your order as if you had completed it at the time you were trying to. And so basically what happened is it kind of sucked because it just did that automatically. And I couldn't go through and try and order again or see if I got a different outcome or anything like that. I was just kind of stuck with it because it knew my phone number and knew I had a reservation set and you can only have one per number. Mm-hmm. So just stuck with their solution, which meant I had to wait until the next day. I get an email after they talk to Verizon and then I complete my order. However, that would have been nice, but that process disabled my ability to pick it up in store.
Oh, geez.
And so basically what I was stuck with was the 2 to 3 week shipping date, which actually was good because by that point it was 5-6 weeks for everybody. So it did, in a sense, hold my place in line to get that somewhat shorter shipping distance or shipping time. But it did screw me out of being able to just go to a store today and pick it up, which is kind of annoying. So I'm not going to get my phone until I'm at the 17th to the 24th window right now. But I've seen so many people see their shipping dates getting moved up. I'm kind of hoping that happens with me.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll only be a week or two.
I mean, that's not terrible, all things right. considered, with like what people were speculating on before this launched, when like all those, you know, like rumors were coming out. That we're saying like, oh, you know, it seems like they do this every year. And I almost wonder if it's like there are people that are just like in these companies, like these analyst companies that really are just like day trading Apple stock, and like will issue these stories of like, oh, you know, just talk to a part supplier, you know, a leak from whoever, massive problems with the front facing camera is going to cause severe supply constraints.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, Apple drops 25 cents or whatever, but they're shorting like millions of dollars of stock, so they make money on that. Like I have never been able to figure out like the motivation behind these weird rumors that happen every single year. Every year someone says like, oh, there's huge problems with the new iPhone, and you know, can't believe it, you know, no one's gonna be able to buy one, all this stuff. And it never turns out to be true. I mean, like, yeah, supply, you know, never meets demand on these like flagship phones, but you know, like the people were saying like, oh man, I hope I even get mine this year.
Yeah.
You know, like if I miss the 1201 pre-order, I hope I get one this month at least. It's like,
that's what I thought was interesting, and especially kind of dispelled all those, you know, rumors about the supply constraints and stuff like that, is that even at its latest, like the next day and into the next day and whatever, shipping times were still like 4 to 6 weeks or whatever the longest one it had been.
Yeah.
Whereas you would think that if it was really as crazy as they were making it out to seem, that anybody ordering the next day or two after would be getting theirs like months from now, instead of like, you know, a month and a half at the latest. So
I honestly,
and all those times has steadily been improving. So
yeah, I kind of wonder if people have been a little burnt and kind of scared by the AirPods stuff.
Yeah,
where it's like, even if you
that took
like,
forever to level up.
Yeah, even if you wanted AirPods really bad, like good luck. Kind of thing. Yeah. Like I knew people that didn't have them for months after launch, because it was like you couldn't order them online, and you know, if you went to an Apple store, they'd just be like, no, you got to catch us like 10 minutes after we take our box out of them that comes randomly.
Right.
So I don't know, but the so I was lucky enough to get a day, you know, launch day pickup at my local Apple store, which worked out fine. Showed up at 8:30, stood in line behind like six people, three of which didn't have reservations, so it really was only in line with three people. I have no idea why they were inside, and everyone seemed confused, and it always seems
they're
to
just
me
hoping
like,
for the best.
Yeah, like I don't really know what they were thinking. Yeah, so that was a little odd. But what was strange about this particular iPhone launch is usually it seems like when they do an iPhone launch, it's like you go in an Apple store and they have, you know, like a dozen tables set up of like all their stuff. Like every spot you could fit a person in would have an Apple person standing there with like a, you know, another person setting up their iPhone or buying an iPhone or doing the trade-in thing or whatever else. Yeah. But like my Apple store, like they were only really processing those transactions in like one corner of the store, which was weird because like there was a couple hundred people in line outside and it was cold. Yeah. You know, it was like, it's just starting to get to Chicago winters. It was kind of miserable outside. And it just seemed strange. It was like one of those things where I wonder if they, well, this seems like a non-Apple thing to do, but I wonder if they're like artificially slowing how quickly they go through the line. So when like the news vans drive by, they can be like, oh, look, there's 200 people in line for the iPhone X.
Yeah, you definitely heard a lot of stuff about that today because there were lines all over of long lines. And we had noticed the last couple iPhone releases, those lines hadn't really been happening because Apple sort of streamlined the whole ordering process and the shipping had been quick or pickup or whatever. And it's valuable to have those headlines of a million people waiting in line for this hot new thing. So I don't know if they're artificially doing it or not, but I think they're happy to see, you know, they could definitely be thinking, well, we're going to release some to walk-in customers and that'll create a line no matter what. So, you know.
Yeah, I guess it was just strange because like with the line that they had, and the employees they usually have on typical launch days, like I feel like they could have blasted through that in like a half hour, 45 minutes with, you know, the 50 people they normally have working instead of like the three people that were helping people through the line. But I really kind of wonder if Apple is kind of trying to manage that image of the iPhone 8 launch not really doing anything.
Could be.
Which I don't know. Who knows? You know, like Apple's a very weird company, and this could all be in her head, or just totally intentional manufactured lines that, you know, they engineered from the part of.
What
the
I do know is that you'll never know for sure.
Yeah, that's 100%. So, I guess with me as the only one with the iPhone X, I guess I'll run through my initial impressions of it. So far, Face ID is pretty cool. It works except when it doesn't. And, I'm still kind of getting used to is like when it doesn't recognize you for whatever reason, like after it fails like twice, from you holding it weird, or I can't really figure out the behavior of this, but like, it'll lock you out and make you put your passcode in, but it's like not, as obvious as when Touch ID fails. So like what I'll be doing is like sitting here with my phone, like, you know, adjusting how I'm looking at it and stuff like that. Like, oh, it's not working. Cause like the way that it indicates that it's locked or unlocked is this, you know, just the lock at the top of the screen, which is where your eyes typically focus. Cause like that's looking like almost at the sensor, you know, and like not at the bottom of the screen where it's like telling you in tiny text, like, oh, it's not working, put your passcode in.
Yeah, on Touch ID, it throws you straight to the passcode entry screen, I believe.
Yeah. So it's obvious. It's like, oh, here's where you put your number in, dummy, instead of like needing to swipe in order to get that.
Yeah.
I thought that the touch bar, like whatever, I don't know what the real deal word is for the little UI element that you use instead of the home button now. But it's really, it hasn't taken me that long to get used to that gesture. I thought it would be like a way bigger deal to, like adjust back from the home button. Like really the only thing that is kind of holding me back from how I used to use my phone is that like, I would usually like when I'm working at my desk and like, if something, I need something on my phone, like I'd usually just kind of look over with it laying flat on my desk and like, just, you know, rest my fingertip on it and it would unlock and I could, you know, like diddle around without picking it up. But now like with the way that this works, like I have to very deliberately like pick it up, hold it in front of my face and. So like that, which I don't know. I mean, like it's just a different way to do things.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's necessarily a you know, a bad thing or a good thing.
Well,
or
it's just in reading with the reviews and impressions and stuff that have been coming out, a lot of people are like, you know, there's limitations to Touch ID too, and the workflow that you go through using it to do the things that you do, that you don't really realize because it's just the way it is, and you're used to how it works now. And so it seems like seamless and perfect and, you know, whatever. And it seems like a lot of people are getting the new iPhone are realizing that the Face ID has its own set of limitations that's different from Touch ID. Yeah. But it also, you create your own flow with it. And once you kind of get used to how it works, it just is like, in a lot of ways better. But it's also not like is feeling like it's slowing you down like it is at first.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting. I thought one of the coolest tips I heard was... don't, when you're pulling your phone out of your pocket, don't hold it and stare at it and wait for it to unlock and then swipe. And just pull it out of your pocket and swipe to get to the home screen like you normally would. And it does the Face ID stuff while you're doing that anyway. And then it's like all one smooth motion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think because people are still getting used to it, they're kind of holding it at their phone and letting it stare at their face and unlock to make sure everything's unlocked and then swiping to the home screen and feeling like, man, this is clunky and slow compared to Touch ID. But it might just be like a workflow thing, you know?
Yeah, I'm just not used to like but you know, you have years of getting used to Touch ID, right? So like that's very, very normal to me. Another kind of habit that I've gotten into, you know, like better or for worse, is like when I'm driving, like listening to music or whatever, I don't use the thing on the lock screen. Like I just never got in the habit of using that little widget, you know? So I'd always just kind of like, I usually like plug my phone into the charger and like leave in my cup holder, you know, and like I would pick it up like to change songs. I just pick it up in my right hand, like with my thumb on the Touch ID button, and it'd be unlocked, and like Spotify would just be open. I would just hit back and forward on that, and that's how I would use it instead of like using the lock screen stuff. But I guess like the functionality is the same more or less. It's just like training my brain to get out of things I've been doing for years, I think is going to be a big thing for a lot of people. Cameras are way nicer, I guess. This is the first time that I've had a phone with the two cameras on the back, because I'm more of a non-XL dude. So I've got the 2x zoom for the first time now, which is surprisingly nice for like taking what would be like blurry macro shots for stuff, because you can just kind of like flip it into 2x mode and like hold your phone like, I don't know, maybe what is this, like maybe 8 inches away from what you're taking a picture of, and it's like a super close-up clear shot, instead of doing like the dance where you're like holding your phone and be like, all right, how close can I get it to get this to focus? But you know,
As a Plus user, I got it. One of the major reasons I went up to the Plus was because it had the dual camera and it sounded so cool and stuff like that. And I don't think I've once used portrait mode, which is like one of the main things for having the two cameras.
Yeah.
But I use that 2x zoom all the time. And it makes quite a difference, because the natural zoom on an iPhone, you know, when you pinch the screen or whatever, it's not really a zoom. It's all digital. You know what I mean? So I remember someone saying a long time ago, they're like, you know, don't worry about zooming in on things when you're taking pictures. Just snap the picture as it is and zoom in on it later, because it's actually like a better quality or the same quality or whatever. But it's when you actually have that second lens that actually is a closer zoom, you notice it, and it's super handy.
I almost kind of like, after I've been diddling around with this a bit, I'm like, man, I wish there was like a third camera that's 4x or something like that.
The
you
whole
know?
Back
like,
is just camera.
Just nothing but different fixed zooms. Pretty cool. Yeah, like, so when they announced the Animoji stuff, I was like, this is stupid, I don't care. Like, but I'm sure kids will like this, you know, because everyone's wild about their Snapchat filters and stuff like that. But like, I have fiddled around with that so much. Like, that's probably the number one feature of all the stuff on the iPhone X that I've been doing in the limited time that I've had it today, is just sending like ridiculous Animojis to people.
Worth $1,000.
So what's interesting though is that Animojis do not track your face that fast. Like, if you do like rapid head movements and stuff like that, which, you know, I only kind of did because like a lot of the Animojis, like if you use the pig, like his ears wiggle around, and like if you use the poop, like the very top of the poop will kind of like have physics attached to it and stuff. So it's kind of like trying to like rapidly shake my head around. It just like, it loses tracking after a bit. But I mean, I guess that's not how the thing is sort of designed to work. But overall, like, it's really cool. It's kind of separate. Whether or not you have Animojis in my iMessage right now is sort of separating the haves from the have nots right now, which is a little silly. But like, I've had friends of mine like send me text message, be like, oh, do a lip sync to this song with the pig and stuff. Like, that's been the demand for Animoji stuff. But pretty cool so far. I really, really like the size of the phone. So I was never into the Plus size. Like, I got the my original 6 Plus sitting on my desk here. And I, as soon as I got this, like, I had that like, I don't know, that like terrible feeling that you get when you like did something that like made a huge mistake, right? When I opened the box the first time, I was like, oh, and what have I done? Because I've always been like a big like minimal pocket kind of guy. I've always really liked small cell phones, like the Motorola Sliver, which was the candy bar razor. That was actually my favorite cell phone of all time, because it was just like really small, no screwing around. Battery lasted for days. I actually never, what's interesting about that phone is I don't even think I ever took the wall charger out of the bag. Like, I just was able to plug into my car charger anytime I drove, and that was enough to always keep the phone charged. Which was pretty crazy to think that that was
the
possibility at some point, right? But anyway, I've always been, you know, like, I don't like the footprint of the Plus size phones, but like, whenever, because my girlfriend's had a Plus size like since you could get one, you know, and like, I always like looking at her phone, I'm like, man, the screen's so big, that's nice. Like, playing Hearthstone on that would be really cool and all this stuff. But like, I like the larger screen, not the larger footprint. And it feels like the iPhone X is really the best of both worlds, because like, it's got the screen real estate that like exceeds, well, I don't know how it compares pixel to pixel, but it feels bigger the screen size itself feels bigger than the actual like active screen on the plus size phone, because you lose like the huge top and bottom bezels.
Yeah.
So it's really like a Goldilocks phone for me, in that it's like, you know, the right size with a bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting. Man, your cat is just going wild today. Kind of interesting to see if in the future they've got that they do like a plus model of the iPhone X that has a bigger screen and still no bezel, or how that's all going to work out, or if this is just like the new size moving forward, and if you want the plus you can get, you know, the 8 plus, or if they do some other iteration of that, like who knows what's going to happen.
I don't know. I think it'll be, I mean, if my prediction of next year's holds true, that there's another, you know, regular style iPhone update, you know, an iPhone 9 and 9 plus, and then a new iteration of the X that's the same size as this year's. But I think like what they're going to do eventually is move towards, having all phones be iPhone 10 style with no home button and stuff like that. But I think they're just kind of staggering it. And so, if that's the case, then I think that once we get to that point, there will be multiple sizes of it, because, you know, that maybe even like three sizes, something that's closer to like a iPhone 5 size, like the SE is, and then something that's like a regular size and then a big size. But, for now, I don't know. I feel like they're just going to hold on to this medium, the porridge is just right size.
Yeah.
Because you kind of, like you said, you get the big screen, like most people want big phones for, but you get a more manageable actual physical size. So,
One thing that was sort of interesting in talking to the dude at the Apple store that was, checking me out, was I asked him like what the size distribution was as far as like what most people were going for. And he said that like most people were getting the 64 gig version, which I found to be kind of surprising, because like, I don't know, if you're going to get like the flagship phone, why would you like skimp on the size? You know, right? Doesn't that?
Yeah, I guess it really depends. I mean, if you've not even approached 64 on your current phone, there's no reason to think that you're going to need like four times the size.
Yes, but I mean, this phone like natively shoots 4K video and stuff like that. Like, I feel like this is going to be easier than ever before to fill up your storage. And like, they have friends of mine that I actually have hassled a few of my friends that got 64 gig version. Like, dude, what the fuck? You spend $1,000 on a phone. Like, what's another $100 at that point to get the bigger one? And they're like, well, I don't use, like, I have Spotify, Twitter, and Facebook installed on my phone, and iCloud like offloads my stuff. So like, what do I need it for? Which, I mean, I guess that's valid, you know, but like,
that's valid. I would just rather, I'm the type that would rather be safe than sorry. And so, you know, if you realize that you're taking a ton of video and it's eating up all the space, then you hit your limit, you're kind of stuck until next year, and you have to figure out a way to work around that. And so that would be annoying. I'd rather have all that space and not have to use it and spend the extra money and not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I don't know. Every dollar counts for a lot of people. I mean, it's either, is it 100 or 150 price difference?
I think it's 150, but I could be wrong.
I think so too. But yeah, I mean, that's not nothing.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean though. If you're going to be spending the $1,000, why not spend an extra little bit to get the full thing? But I don't know. It is interesting though that most people are going for that cheaper, less space model.
Yeah, and you know, that could be just be anecdotal. Like that could just be the, like the, you know, random people that this guy got shuffled as, you know, they came through the line or whatever. But so this year I got a scratch in my iPhone 7 screen, and like just enough that like I can kind of like feel it when I move my finger around on the screen, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like barely visible if you look at it the right way. And I can't even tell you how much that has bothered me over like the last 6 months or whatever. It's like, I've never had a scratch you can feel on the phone. Like usually you get like those scuffs on it you know, if you look at your phone at like a super severe angle, you can be like, oh yeah, all right, there's, you know, some random little scuffs on it, but like no big deal.
How do you even scratch the glass on an iPhone?
I don't know. Like, I think I must have had like something, like some weird, like, I don't know, like a piece of rock in my pocket, or like
a diamond.
Maybe, I don't know. Like maybe I have like dropped it and hit something. Yeah. Who knows? So this time I've resigned myself to using a screen protector, and it's driving me even more crazy. Like
I don't think I can do that.
So I ordered two different types on Amazon. Like, so a lot of the screen protectors that I've seen, I don't know if this is just how most of them are now or whatever, but like they don't cover the full front. They just like are very precisely cut to just cover like the screen part of it.
Huh.
You know what I mean? So you have like if you have a case on your phone, you have like a gap between the screen where the screen protector stops covering the screen and like where the case starts. Which like, I don't know, that always kind of bothered me when I like, you know, like helped other people with their phone and stuff and use them, because it was like, I don't know, what's nice about the iPhone is just like one piece of, like, it feels like the screen is just one
smooth,
piece of glass,
way.
Right?
Yeah.
So I ordered two types, and one is the normal, like, just screen cutout, and the other one is like this full face thing. Like, so I put the, and screen protectors come with three now, so you get like multiple do-overs if you mess it up, which really, I mean, it seems kind of absurd to think, like, back in the day when, like, remember like iSkins when those were a thing on like the iPad and stuff, you paid like 25 bucks for one.
Yeah.
And if you messed it up, it's like, all right, well,
you're screwed.
Too bad. So sad, bro. But yeah, so I was like, all right, well, there's three, so I'll be able to like kind of, you know, at least try one of each and see which I like. So I installed the one with the like close cutout one. I hate it, because when you swipe up from the bottom, like that swipe, you need to be swiping from like the very, very bottom of the screen. So for that, it means like every time you do that, you're swiping
you feel the bump
over the edge of the screen protector.
Oh,
which
I
is just like just
that
reminding you constantly, like, oh, this, you have a screen protector on, you idiot. Like, you're not not hardcore enough to just like rock it with no screen protector. So I installed the other one. But so the problem with this like full face one that I have on now is that, so I also have the Apple silicone case on, which is really pretty nice. I always usually do the leather one, but decided to try the silicone out this year. But the problem is like the full front face screen protector extends like under where the lip of the case comes over. So if you've never seen an Apple case before, they like go over the front and like do like a lip around the front of the screen. So like if your phone falls like face down, it hits like that front lip of the case instead of the phone. But the problem is with the screen protector extending beyond that, what the case is doing is like pinching all the edges of the screen protector. So like all my corners are like not seated all the way. So it like, it looks like the screen protector just like installed wrong. When like, really it's like, I can't even tell you how meticulously I installed this thing to like not have any dust and anything else. But like the case is just pinching it weird, so it's not like seating all the way, which is driving me even more nuts. So I think by the end of the day, I'll have no screen protector on this thing.
So if there was a first world problem Olympics, you would be a gold medalist.
I know.
Is what you're saying.
Tell me about it. So I don't know. It sucks. I thought I was between the two of you. I was like, surely I'll like one of these, but they're both bad. So I wasted like,
I'm calling it right now that by next week, you're going to go full naked phone.
Oh, next week, dude, by today, by the time we're off.
By later
podcast,
today.
Yeah. Cause every time I look at it, it drives me nuts. Cause like every single corner is just a little kind of just coming up off the screen enough that you can see that there's a screen protector there. It's just driving me nuts.
How do you feel about the glass back and, you know, that part of the phone?
It seems fine. I don't know. I usually have a case. Like I've rocked the leather case for the last few years, so like I don't see the back of my phone, but it's fine. The inductive charging is really cool. I picked up just a cheapy Anker inductive, you're supposed to pronounce it like chi or key or
I say
QI,
key. I don't know what it's supposed to be.
So there's a million of those on Amazon for like $15 or less. So I just picked up an Anker one because I have Anker batteries and they've all been good. So, and this thing was not expensive, but like really, really cool to just like have this on my desk here and like, you know, just like be doing something on my phone. Then just like, oops, sorry. So my PC just crashed, but anyway, to continue my thought, since, I don't really know where it stopped recording, inductive charging is awesome. It's a total game changer. I'm really kind of jealous of friends of mine that have modern cars now that will have these inductive charging pads on them, like as part of like the car console. I think like the new Prius has that and a few other cars, which seems really cool to just be able to like, oh, I just threw your phone there, it's charging. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear about like, you know, I guess with the current technology, it's like, you know, has to be seated just right to be charging. And sometimes vibration notifications overnight will knock it off the pad and things like that. Those are like the two main complaints I've heard about it. Also that it's slower than cabled charging. Yeah. But
I mean,
fiddling
with mine, it's like all you really got to do is just like make sure it's like vaguely centered on the pad. And that's fine. It was the thing that's awkward about it is at least the one I bought, charging pad's like way smaller than the phone. So it's like kind of like teetering your phone on top of this thing.
Yeah, I don't understand why I don't make one that's just like a built for that phone, like that holds it.
Yeah, like well, I kind of think, I suspect that that's the problem that the Apple charging pad thing is going to solve, because it looks like you can just throw anything on it anywhere and it'll just work.
Yeah, that thing's huge.
But the rumors are saying it's going to be $200, which seems like
yeah, I don't want that
a charging thing, but who knows?
I don't know. I think it'll be cool. I think it's like a nice step towards the future where any coffee shop you go to, every airplane you're on, any place you go, pretty much will have these pads places so that you can, you know, make sure you're kind of always getting topped up on your juice, yeah, whatever. But I think even after I do get my phone, I don't think I'm going to bother getting any of the charging pads. Cause
maybe they'll buy a cheapie.
Maybe just to throw it on there and see how it works or whatever. But
yeah,
as far as like my normal charging routine is just before I go to bed anyway. And I got a nice long 6-foot wire and, you know, it's never really been a problem to plug it in at night like that on my nightstand. So I don't really feel like adding a pad to my already cluttered nightstand is going to change that much, but
yeah. So I usually, when I go to bed, I listen to podcasts with these like sleep headphones. Mm-hmm. So I need to use all sorts of insane wires and adapters anyway. So, it's just nice to have on my desk, cause I'm picking up my phone so often throughout the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with that, let's get a quick word in from our sponsor and then we'll talk about some of the news of the week. How does that sound?
Sweet.
All right, cool. So this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show is sponsored by Edgar. And Edgar is a side-scrolling, platform-jumping, monster-stomping emoji. You can play Edgar and see how platform jumper controls can be better and simpler on a mobile device when you add some motion sensor magic. Edgar Emoji features 40 original, increasingly challenging levels in a retro style. You can get Edgar Emoji for free on the App Store for your iPhone or iPad. Pretty good for first try, right?
That's it. I'm now looking that game up because I've never heard of it.
Edgar Emoji. It looks cool. I'm going to check it out. That's a cool thing about people advertising with us. Like the App Store. I mean, like, I don't mean to like sound like an advertising shill or whatever, of course.
Right.
No, like the App Store is filled with so much stuff now, like even following all the time, like there's still stuff that I see, like, you know, whether like someone buys ads or like gets posted like somewhere on Reddit or like on another site or whatever. It's like, oh shit, I didn't even see that this week.
Yeah, no, same here.
So that's cool. But anyway, I guess news of the week, we can blow through our typical recap of anything that you might have missed or otherwise should be potentially interested if you care about mobile games of any kind, not necessarily specifically limited to iOS even. So I guess the week started off with a Twitter reveal of a sequel for The Room, and it's called The Room Old Sins, and it's coming on January 25th with an Android release following shortly thereafter. So not a ton of details on this.
I want to say that this was announced before and that this is the actual... Oh, yeah. This was actually announced way back in March.
Was it?
Yeah. So, so this is like the launch date. So it's been kind of a long time coming for this. Yeah. But.
All right. Well, so there's like a little teaser video they posted on Twitter, which just kind of like shows, you know, another like, so modern is a dumb way to put it, but like, recent, like, I don't know what's the right way to say Room 2 and 3 in this context. I don't know. someone that's better at speaking English is probably screaming at their podcast app right now, but, In more recent Room games, like, they've kind of transitioned off of these like puzzle boxes and onto more like full scene, like diorama style things that kind of still work like the puzzle box, but just have a lot more to them. Like these individual like dioramas might have puzzle boxes inside of them that need to be solved that then give you like a clue that like opens up another piece of like the little model or whatever that you know, includes. And so the little teaser, it looks like that's what's gonna be happening in this Room game. It's not super clear yet though if this is gonna be like effectively the Room 4 or just like kind of you know, a little one-off adventure kind of thing. It is interesting that it's not specifically titled the Room 4 Old Sins, right? So I don't know, read between the lines on that however you want. It's coming out January 25th. Kind of interesting. If I was, It makes me wonder if their release date is because like they're just under super crunch right now and like, just can't get it out before the end of the year, or if Apple is like, all right, well, here's when we can slot you in for like app of the day, or you know, do whatever.
Who knows anymore?
It seems like if I was going to launch a game like this that was from like a, you know, recognizable developer and like a, you know, the closest thing you get to like a franchise on mobile, right? I would be burning the midnight oil to get it launched before Christmas,
right?
You know, but who knows, a bunch of things can be happening. So we found out about this game this week that that launched called HQ Live Trivia Show, which is it's a free game that you can download that is really, it feels weird. It's like playing like when Tassos wrote this, he compared it to feeling like a Black Mirror episode, which is pretty spot on. If you haven't seen Black Mirror, it's kind of like a modern sort of Twilight Zone sort of thing. So 2 times a day. At 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, this like wide-scale online game show thing goes live, and you can participate with anyone else that's on the app. And it's like, you know, there's a chat thing, and you know, it's a lot of just like multiple choice questions, and so it's, I don't know, it's like really, really cool how it works out. I mean, it's kind of dumb, free to play-ish. Kind of thing, you know. You can tell it's like kind of like how what was that, Trivia Crack, right? How that game was like so like obviously mass market. So it's like that, but with this live stream host thing, which I think is a really cool angle. Like it feels like you're playing a game show like actively, instead of like, you know how, I don't know, there's been, I feel like game show games have been a thing like since the NES, right? I remember we had Jeopardy on the NES, which was terrible. But this actually feels like you're on or interacting with like a show sort of thing. Like it almost reminds me of, what was that Xbox Live game that was like based on this quiz show thing? It was like 1 versus 100, right?
Yeah, that's something like that. That was fun. I liked that.
Did you ever play that? I only ever watched friends play it. It looks pretty cool. How was it? Like,
it was cool. It was especially cool if you actually like were, if you won. Because you figured, like, man, there's so many people out there playing this, and somehow I won. But yeah, it was fun.
So I don't know, you know. So it's called HQ Live Trivia Show. You can find it on the App Store. It's free. If nothing else, I would just download it and, like, you know, if you can make a 3 p.m. or 9 p.m. Eastern event, check it out. Just do it once. It's pretty neat. I don't know. I don't know how much legs this kind of thing has, because I did it once. I was like, oh, that's really cool, and then you know. It was not like I was like setting my alarm for the next one or anything else like that. So in 64-bit update land, it seems like things are kind of starting to taper off a little bit with unexpected games getting 64-bit update. But I would say that Solomon's Boneyard is definitely high up there in games that I like. If you even asked me to make a list of games I thought were going to get updated, maybe, I don't think Solomon's Boneyard would be on it.
Well, when they did Solomon's Keep, he said the Boneyard update should be right behind it. And I think it might have got delayed through Apple or something like that, because it was supposed to be out 2 or 3 weeks ago. But it was a nice thing to wake up to. I'm glad that it finally got updated, and at least those two games are living on, because they're awesome.
I mean, I guess I would include Solomon's Keep in that too. Because that game's so old, you know, it's like, and they're premium games too. So it's like, what is this guy doing 10 years later, wasting time updating these games that he's probably making $3 a month on?
Well, that's part of the updates, though, is that they're actually ad-supported free-to-play now. If you owned them before, you get that automatically. And I don't know. It's a good thing. And, you know, if people hadn't wanted to spend money on something like that before, they can now try them out for free. And if you hate the ads, you can get rid of them. You know, pretty standard stuff, but probably a much friendlier and more modern pay model for that type of game for nowadays.
For sure. So we've been following the Razer smartphone thing. Which is just called the Razer phone, I guess, which that's cool. I was too busy to post about the actual announcement, which I probably should do whenever.
It was all the same as this leak, though, right?
Yeah. So the specs, you know, quote unquote leaked. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know. It's an Android phone. It's got a, you know, fast Android processor in it, 8 gigs of RAM, you know, a nice camera, Dolby Atmos sound, which is kind of interesting for a phone. But the coolest part about it is the 120 hertz screen, which is the same, well, you know, the same basic idea as the iPad Pro, which is pretty substantially different. But I don't know, like, it's one of those things, like, I'm always, you know, don't get me wrong, like, I like Apple stuff a lot, but I wish that there would be, like, a very good competitor that would come along and, like, kind of just take some of the wind out of Apple's sails, so, like, they would need to do more than kind of just, like, you know, annual iterations, which admittedly are always good, but not, like, there hasn't been, like, anything in the, like, even Face ID, like, that has been, like, oh, shit, this is, like, this is the one you need to get. Like, if you have an iPhone 7, you need to drop that and get this new phone, because it's that cool. So, you know, I think there's almost no chance this Razer phone goes anywhere, but it would be cool if it did.
I just think that, you know, the market for this type of device, like, is very niche, and there's people out there that really want this, you know, heavy spec device, and especially on Android, where you can do a lot more things with that than you can on iOS.
But why, though? I mean, like
I don't know, so you can run Half-Life 2 on it or something. I don't know. You know, whatever you want that for, but I just think it's so impractical that that's the reason it's never going to take off, because, you know, there's no games to take advantage of this sort of thing. And if there were, they'd destroy your battery in a matter of minutes. So it'd be very impractical. Yeah. And it just seems like, you know, Apple's approach has always been integrated hardware and software. And because of that, and the tools that they release, like Metal and stuff like that, it's almost like you don't need those high specs to get the kind of results that you get using Apple's ecosystem, I guess.
Right.
Compared to where if you put it on something else that does have crazy beefy hardware or whatever, you're going to be taxing that hardware to get those same sort of results, I think, because of the OS and the different software you have to use. So I don't know, like, just at a basic level, that's not 100% true, but you know what I mean? Like, what's this phone going to do for anybody that other phones out there right now that don't have, you know, 16 gigs of RAM or whatever can do?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't see the point of it.
The bigger issue is like, what software exists in mobile right now that's like, oh, damn, I only wish there was an Android phone that had 8 gigs of RAM, because it would make this game so much better. You know, like, it seems like Razer is taking, like, a very, like PC gaming style approach to this, which, you know, in the PC gaming world, like, there are games all the time that it's like, oh, like, this game's good now, but in, like, 6 months when a way better video card comes out, it's going to be so much cooler. That happens all the time. I mean, that's very normal, but that doesn't, in the world of mobile gaming, it's like, you have to build a game that targets as many devices as possible, with which, you know, both Android and iOS is kind of annoying, because it's like, you know, developers are still targeting, like, the iPhone 5 as, you know, like, their low-end hardware because of the iPhone SE, which is still being sold, you know? So, and really, I've heard a lot of developers even, like, will go back to, like, any device that is capable of running iOS 11. Which, I mean, Apple's still supporting it, so I guess you have to, too.
The problem is, it's a catch-22, and I think that's why these gaming-centric phones have never worked out, but, it costs a lot of time and money to make really graphically intensive games. And so if you're going to do that, you want to know that you have, like, a pretty big install base to try and sell that game to. And so if there's not millions of people rushing out to buy a phone with specs like this, there's no reason to target a phone with specs like this.
Well, more importantly, though, a million people rushing out to buy this phone that are then willing to spend a lot of money on software for the phone.
Yeah, that's the other problem. And I think something like this will be, I think there's going to be some nice benefits, like, especially with all the PC ports, like Witness and Talos Principle and stuff that have been coming over, that are very obviously kind of like taxing the current iOS hardware pretty hard. And they've got to turn a lot of effects down and stuff like that. Which is fine. They still are great looking games and stuff, but, you know, I'm a big advocate of even for mobile games, having, like, setting sliders for things like that, so that, you know, if you are on an iPhone 5, you can turn a bunch of stuff down and it'll look worse, but it'll run better. And if you do have the latest stuff, you can turn a lot of things up and have it look fancier or whatever. So, you know, if you had a phone like this, you could just super max everything out and that would be great. But as far as, like, specific games being built for mobile that can take advantage of hardware like this, it's just not a good option. It's not feasible.
I mean, like, what seems even more concerning to me is that, like, you've had companies like Sony that have tried to push gaming phones with their own proprietary platform of like, hey, check out all these old ass, very classic PlayStation games you can play only on this phone, which has a slide out controller to make the experience not so bad. And that even bombed. So like, if Sony that was able to marry both the hardware and the software in a package that if people were going to buy something like this, they would have bought that. Like, it just, the future for this doesn't seem great, which, you know, and don't get me wrong, like, I wish that was not the case. Like, I, you know, as someone that's super into PC gaming and tweaking out my PC and, like, you know, new video cards and all that stuff, I really wish that there was a equivalent in the mobile gaming world where it was like, oh, dude, I got to get, like, the sickest spec phone because, you know, these whatever amazing games, like, only run good on that and stuff. But that's just not the reality that we live in right now. And with the momentum that mobile has towards, you know, just simple games that run on everything, like, it's hard to imagine that changing too terribly much, you know? I don't know. We'll see.
I think the concept of having full blown games that you can play on the go like that just breaks down because nobody really actually wants that. And you can make an argument for like the Switch and stuff like that and its portability. And that is great. But you also see the stats of like people that play Switch almost, you know, vast majority of them play it at home. And if you take something out like that with you, like say you have a daily commute on a train, that almost doesn't count to me because you have that, however long your commute is, you have that devoted time to gaming. So you can be like, hey, I'm gonna be sitting on a train for an hour doing nothing. Of course, I'm going to bring a game and get lost into it. And it's great that you can do that. Right. But like when I think of mobile gaming, I think of like, ah, crap, I got to wait 5 minutes to see my doctor and I need something to do. And you pull your phone out and you find something dumb to do for a few minutes or whatever. It's not like you really want to like hop into The Witness and try and solve a bunch of puzzles and have this big grossing experience. Like, I'm happy those exist. And I think there's a time and place for them. But I don't think like the out and about gaming, you know, works for that.
Right.
And
like so, for me, for games like that, like I play them on my iPad, you know, sitting in my chair, like, and they take basically the same amount of attention and everything else as like playing a console game or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is fine. But it's just, I don't think that's how most people consume mobile content, which
I don't
know. It is what it is. So Razer Phone, I wish I had the other news story in front of me, but they announced a lot more, but it's basically in line with what we've been talking about. So in real game news, I guess, Rome Total War is getting a iPhone version. It's going to be a universal update, which is pretty cool. I'm actually kind of curious to see how this is all going to work out myself because like the UI of Rome Total War on the iPad is kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like they do a good job, but it's like one of those games where it's like, oh, I see why this is an iPad game sort of thing. And I'm really curious to see how they get around that. Mm-hmm. Like if they just make everything smaller and like, hey, if you want to play on your iPhone, cool, deal with it. Or if it's like they really like revisited stuff and, you know, everything's cool. So following in line with Minecraft, Roblox, which I think, is that how you pronounce it? Or Roblox?
Roblox is what Roblox? I always say.
I don't know. I don't have kids, so I don't know these things. So it got a cross-platform update too. So mobile players can play with Xbox people, which is pretty cool. I even though I don't really care about this specific game, like it's nice to see that as kind of like a trend moving forward. Elder Scrolls Legends is getting a new expansion called Return to the Clockwork City next month. And every time we post about this, I feel bad that I don't play it because I feel like I would really enjoy it. But Hearthstone sucks up so much of my time as is. South Park Phone Destroyer, which is a game we've been following for a while. I think it got announced at E3, right? Or
I think so,
around
E3.
I think at the Ubisoft thing before E3.
Yeah.
So you've been able to sign up for a while for the pre-launch thing. It's coming next week, November 9th. It looks like the same sort of combat system as the South Park RPG games, which is pretty cool. So we'll see if it actually destroys your phone or not. I don't know. I think that this game will do very well.
The people who have been playing the soft launch have said a lot of nice things about it.
Yeah, like it seems like a good game. It's a good IP. And I'm sure they're going to advertise the shit out of it. And everyone seems to like South Park, so that'll get people in the door. And it should just be cruise control from there for them. So in Animal Crossing Pocket Camp news, we talked about a lot about this last week. So if you missed last week's episode, it's a good, like, I don't know, like skip like halfway in and we talk about for like a good 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the criticisms we had was that there is a minimal amount of depth to the game. Like, it seems pretty basic, and it seemed kind of expected too, considering like Nintendo's stance of like, hey, these games are meant to kind of like tease you into the real game on our platform, sort of thing. Which may not actually be quite as true as we really thought with this. So, people that are into like digging through the Android data files for these games, they discovered a bunch of stuff inside of Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, including like potential garden functionality coming in the future where you can like grow plants and stuff. There's a whole ton of new areas that are mentioned in various files in the game, like a school shop, hospital, department store, stuff like that. There's more clothes for your character, like costumes and stuff, and weather effects. So there's definitely more than meets the eye to Animal Crossing. Whether or not they're robots in disguise, couldn't tell you. Transformers reference, clever, right?
It's cool. I think that's like, you know, I kind of expected that sort of thing, but I think it's neat to see more specifics about what's coming laid out. But yeah, I'm sure they have a multi-year plan for content for that game.
Yeah, no, for sure. So Iron Marines, which is actually on sale right now, as of when you're listening to this, you're listening to it on Friday when we're recording, is getting two premium heroes and some more content, which is pretty cool. Because it's a very good game, but you know, if you're really good at like kind of RTS sort of stuff, you can beat it. I don't want to say quickly, but you know, it won't take you. You know, it's not a game you're gonna be playing for a month. I guess it's a weekend game. So that's worth checking out. So at the Minecon, a global stream thing that we've been talking about for a while, which is coming up soon. I want to say the 11th.
That is soon.
Double check. Where is the date on this? I don't know. Minecon. Here, let's look. Minecon for everyone. Yeah. Where is the date? November 18th.
Oh, okay.
So on November 18th, Minecon's happening, and you'll be able to vote for a new mob that will be added to Minecraft, which I really dig how inclusive they're making that to everyone. It's like, it doesn't matter that you can't afford to go. Like, if you have Twitch or whatever they're going to broadcast it on, like, you can just follow along and watch. That's really cool. So we've been following along with Arena of Valor, which is, I guess, like, globally the biggest game ever in the history of everything.
Right.
But they've been pushing back their launch date. So now it's going to launch in North American markets early next year. But that is kind of good news in a way, because like if you're pre-registered, you're getting even more goodies for free. So I don't know. You also get some kind of crazy skin, a few more heroes and some other stuff. So I think it's worth putting your email address in the pre-registration thing, because I think like if this game is as big as it is everywhere else, like you'll want that free stuff. So worth checking out. So Butterscotch Shenanigans has revealed more, and that's more with massive air quotes, of their upcoming game Scuffle Buddies.
Yeah.
So basically it's a kind of cinemagraph animated sort of trailer thing. That just shows some meat like hovering on a platform, and there's some like kind of animal sounds and stuff like that. So people are still kind of speculating on what this game is going to be. Current logic is leaning towards it being some kind of like monster battler sort of thing, which kind of fits in with the theme of what they've released so far, but no one really knows yet.
I like the mystery.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that people are playing into the whole kind of tease of all this, because sometimes I've seen developers do this. It's like no one gives a shit. It's embarrassing. You know, I could get like proxy embarrassment because they'll post these teasers and everyone's like, so.
Yeah.
One game that I had on my list to talk about this week is Final Fantasy Dimensions 2. We got a review up on the site. And what's interesting about this one is that it is a freemium game in Europe, or in Japan. And they relaunched it in the North American market as a premium game for $15, where they strip out all the freemium shenanigans and just charge once.
Well, apparently even the original Japanese one, which has been out for almost 3 years, got the same sort of update. It got decommissioned, and so now there is only the premium version, which I think is kind of interesting. And Sean positioned it as like, okay, you know, he thinks that they sort of made their money on that. And so instead of just abandoning it and shutting it down and being like, see ya, everyone, they sort of like are preserving it in a way by releasing it as being a premium game.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
And so, I don't know. It's a neat tactic. And, you know, you've seen sort of jumps back and forth from free to paid or whatever. And there's always some weird issues with stuff like that. But I've never seen it done quite like this with a free-to-play game that's been free-to-play for so long, getting kind of premiumed up for a worldwide release. So,
especially as a game that, as its core, is a social kind of RPG sort of thing, which doesn't lend itself to premium, like, at all. Typically.
What I think is the worst thing about this is that they named it Final Fantasy Dimensions 2, and it really is not a sequel to the original Dimensions, which is a more proper Final Fantasy game where you walk around an overworld and you explore dungeons and blah, blah, blah. This is almost like it's like an arcade version of an RPG where it's sort of like a battle simulator in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a storyline that goes along with it and stuff like that, but it's all very menu-driven, and I actually think it's a super great fit for a mobile game where if you don't want to have to get engaged and possibly trigger a 10-minute cutscene or something like that, or, you know, wander around an overworld when you're just trying to kill a few minutes, you can just bust this thing out and kind of know exactly what you're doing. I'm going to go here. I'm going to do this battle. I'm going to, you know, whatever, level up my guys or whatever. So I almost feel like it's like a made for mobile RPG experience without being a full blown RPG. But I think the naming leads you to think it's going to be something else, which I think is a mistake. They should have called this something totally different. But I don't know. Whatever. I feel like the people who bought it so far, knowing what it is, are enjoying it. And the people who bought it expecting it to be an actual sequel and more similar to the original game are being disappointed. And so I think Sean's review is really great in setting expectations and kind of evaluating it for what it is. So I don't know. If that sort of thing sounds interesting to you, an RPG that's very made for on-the-go playing, then I think it's worth checking out. But if you love the first game and are like, yes, a sequel, more of that, it's not more of that. So
yeah.
You might want to do some research.
The other niche that this could possibly fill pretty well is, like, I knew a lot of people that, you know, have maybe bought a couple of the Final Fantasy ports that have come out and are like, these are cool, but I played 10 minutes of them and like, yeah, I've done this before.
Right.
So if you want a Final Fantasy game to play on the go that you haven't, you know, already beaten several times and are tired of and stuff, like, this is another good way to kind of do that, you know?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, you know, if you know you have an hour on a train to spend, then you might want to really dig into a game, and this might not be the best game to play for an hour straight. Mm-hmm. But if you have, you know, a few minutes to kill here and there, it's kind of perfect for that.
Yeah. So check that out. We got a review up on the site by Sean. It's super exhaustive and everything, like everything he writes. So just a real quick mention for Sonic Forces Speed Battle, which... the third entry in the behind the back Sonic Runner thing, which I don't know, it's cool. It adds multiplayer racing. That's kind of neat. But I always wonder, like, it feels like Sega is always so late to the party when it comes to like doing intelligent things.
Yeah,
it's like they'll dirtle around and do all this dumb shit that like no one likes, and then finally release something good. But it'll be like years after that trend is passed, right?
Yeah,
I mean, because imagine if this was released back when. Like, they were releasing these, like, just dog shit Sonic games on the App Store, and everyone was like, dude, how is it hard to make just a Sonic Endless Runner that's really good?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Well, what's crazy is that I forget which one it was. I think it was Sonic Dash 1. I was pretty heavily into for a long time because it had a really nice kind of character unlock system. So that's kind of what's my hook. And it was a good runner, too. And then I think the sequel came out and I was just too burned out to just to go into another game. Mm-hmm. And then, so now here we have this third one. And so I kind of really had a cynical approach to it where I was like, oh God, this is just Sonic Dash with reskins of the latest game or whatever. And I actually played this for a little bit and it's actually really good. And I think the multiplayer battling really adds something to it as opposed to like the endless run as long as you can until you get to a super high score that you know you'll never top again and then lose all your motivation to keep playing type game. So it's kind of cool the way you battle other people. And it's sort of Mario Kart-ish in that you pick up different weapons and stuff that can kind of screw with the other runners. And I don't know. So I feel bad that I was so cynical about this approaching it, but was pleasantly surprised that it's actually pretty damn fun.
Yeah, it's a cool game. Check it out. Very late to the party, like most stuff Sega does. Just real quick, Morphite is out on Nintendo Switch. So, you know, if you're the kind of person that, like, you know, was into the idea of this game, but, like, you know, I'm just not into virtual controls or, like, don't want to bother the MFI controller or whatever, like,
right.
I think it's worth picking up on the Switch for sure. Catch is it's $15 instead of $8. So you're going to pay the Switch premium, the Switch toll.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. That's still, to me, on the cheap side of games on the Switch.
I mean, honestly, I feel like this game, if it sold for $15 on the App Store, that'd still be fair.
Still be cheap, yeah.
So, I don't know. A new game from Zach Gage, who, if you haven't been following along with his stuff, like his whole gimmick, well, I don't want to say gimmick, but like his, you know, his whatever, I don't know. I don't mean, I don't, his gimmick thing. Sounds nasty. I don't mean to sound nasty, but like, he's into taking, you know, established games you already know, like you understand the basics of, and like adding some really interesting twists that somehow manages to like totally transform the whole thing. With like Spell Tower somehow making like just an unbelievable word search game. Really Bad Chess is crazy because but jumbling up the pieces like makes it into this like unbelievable puzzle game. And you know, Sage Solitaire kind of did Solitaire already, but Flip Flop Solitaire is another kind of twist on that, in that you, it really messes with how you move cards around. Because you can like, they like bind together in like blocks, I guess, and you can kind of like move them based on that. Like, I still don't really 100% understand, like what you do in this, but it seems interesting.
Yeah, I'm like, in the same boat.
I don't know, I can't like intelligently explain how you play the game, but like from the teaser, I was like, oh, all right, another twist on Solitaire. I'm in, I like that
pretty much.
So let's see, you posted the best games for iPhone X. If you have an iPhone 10, which, you know, real quick, games like Agent A, Alto's Adventure, Into the Dead 2, Old Man's Journey, Phoenix 2, Splitter Critters, Super Mario Run, Talos Principle, Threes, and The Witness are basically just like really good games that have been updated to support the iPhone X, which, or iPhone 10, sorry, that, we're checking out. So hopefully we position that well. So when you type in best iPhone 10 games, comes up first, but we'll see. Real quick, there's a little Big Planet like coming, got announced. It's called Wonder Worlds, and they call it like an adventure creator. Looks pretty neat.
It's weird, it was soft launched when I posted that this morning and now it's gone. And so it was actually soft launched for over a month or close to 2 months, and so today was their official unveiling of it though. So part of me thinks that they didn't maybe don't understand how the App Store works and didn't expect something to be out in a couple of countries to other people to be able to get it.
Boy, what a unique situation that would be that
we've never encountered. So I think they thought that they could just announce it and nobody would realize it was out in some places. So they pulled it so that not a million people are downloading it. Because it is free, but it's not free to play. It's like free, and then you can unlock an unlimited pack thing for like $4 or $5, something like that, that lets you create as many levels as you want or whatever. But I don't know. Bottom line is it should be out really soon anyway, and it totally looks like very little Big Planet inspired if you like creating levels that are super – have a lot of moving parts and things like that. I'm pretty excited to see what people do with this game.
Yeah. So BlizzCon is happening right now as we're recording this. Eric and Tassos are sitting in the audience of a Hearthstone panel that I'm still keeping an eye on my corner of my eye. They announced the new Hearthstone expansion, Kobolds and Catacombs, which sounds pretty neat. Add some new card types, you know, 135 new cards. We'll have tons of content on the site as soon as they announce it, and potentially already on the site by the time you're listening to this. So be sure to check that out. Other things of note that don't necessarily have too much to do with mobile that they announced is World of Warcraft Classic servers, which I am super excited for because it's just World of Warcraft like as is, like as it launched with all the expansion stuff, which, oh man, that does it for me in a way that I can hardly describe.
Bring it to mobile.
Also coming next week is Card City Knights 2, which is pretty cool. Card City Knights 1 was really good, and Card City Knights 2 has been on Steam for a while and has been received really well. So it's another game that seems like it probably would have been, if we were in a parallel universe where people would pay $20 for a mobile game, it would have launched first on mobile and just be a mobile game. But that's not the reality we live in. Last but not least, Grid Autosports got a brand new trailer that is pretty freaking cool looking.
If don't watch if you get sick with Horizon Tilt.
Oh, really?
This is like Horizon Tilt the game, which I'm pretty sure you'll be able to turn off. But I think they just wanted to really highlight the tilt controls because it's a mobile version. Yeah. But damn, this game looks awesome.
Looks really cool. People have been they've been teasing it for like a year now. So as you say, just released the game already. God damn. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I guess that's unless you can think of anything else that we need to add. That's kind of our podcast for this week. We'll try to do more games next week. This has just been an insane couple of weeks between the new iPhone stuff, Animal Crossing coming out of the blue, and all this stuff. So. But hopefully it was a good recap for you of the week. If you have an iPhone 10, cool. If not, I think it's worth picking up. It's neat. What else to close this bad boy out?
Anything? Everyone cross their fingers for me that I get mine sooner than anticipated.
Yeah, that would be nice. But anyway, thanks a ton for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. If you want to send us an email for any reason, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. We'd love it if you check out our Patreon at patreon.com/toucharcade. If you do any shopping on Amazon at all, we'd really appreciate it if you did it through toucharcade.com/Amazon. It costs you nothing extra anyway, other than just what you would normally buy on Amazon. And we get referral credit for your purchases, which is pretty good. Helps support the site, goes a long way. With that, I guess that is all I can think of to talk about on this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show. So, have a great weekend, everyone. Hope you enjoy your phone or get it soon if you're like Jared and have it on order. Or, you know, old iPhones are great. You don't need to buy a new one. So
true that.
Have a good weekend, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of Touch Arcade Show.